Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In 1 hour, Ian O'Connor, who wrote the biography on Aaron Rodgers coming out next week, joins the program. Welcome back to G&D. You are listening to The Fan. This show is sponsored exclusively by the law firm Condorian Murad. They'll guide you and your family in the right direction and help you draft a will, set up a trust, and create a healthcare power of attorney. You can schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you to get a discount. kmlawyers.com. It is time for our Beltway Blitz. We'll be covering the Nats, the National Football League, and the Commanders. So let's start right now. Joining us up 95 in Baltimore, Dave Jagler. He and Charlie Slow's working a little early tonight. Pre-game right at 6, first pitch at 6:35. Jags, the old Beltways rivalry reunited this evening at Camden Yards. How are you?
I'm good, and it's a little bit of a new chapter here. It's going to be the first time with James Wood and Jackson Holliday, some new names to add to the long list of notable names who've played in this rivalry since it was first contested in 2006. So excited to see James Wood. Try to hit one. He only hits opposite field home runs, so if he can hit one over the Great Wall of Baltimore, that would be quite an accomplishment.
Jax, what's going on with C.J. Abrams? How's he feeling?
Well, the lineups aren't out yet, but he was walking around the clubhouse. I talked to him. He seems like he's good, so I'm figuring that he's back in there. He was able to pinch run in the game on Saturday, so I think just a little exercise of caution without being in there on Sunday, but until the lineup is out for sure, that's in the manager's hands, but he seemed to be in good spirits and moving around well in the clubhouse.
Looked like some roster moves today for the Nationals, a bat and an arm coming in each direction. What'd they do?
Yeah, Andres Chaparro, who has been raking at AAA since he was acquired in the Dylan Floro trade. He is here. Harold Ramirez, who had some initial good games after Jesse Winker was traded, he's been designated for assignment, so Chaparro gives him a right-handed bat, either as a DH spot or a corner infielder. And then Jordan Weems, who had one appearance coming off the injured list, walked 4 in a struggling appearance. He was designated for assignment. So an older rookie, if you will, Orlando Ribalta, who was a draft pick in 2019, has never seen the big leagues, has pitched pretty well at AA and AAA this year. He's going to be joining the bullpen for a potential big league debut. So same for Chaparro. So potentially a couple of big league debuts here in Baltimore tonight.
You mentioned Chaparro, who is 25 years old, came over in the Floro deal. He's put up huge numbers. Now, he was in a pretty hitter-friendly ballpark and circuit for much of the year, but then he homered in his first 3 games with the Rochester Red Wings as well. So it's 23 home runs, over 80 driven in this year and 400 at-bats, hitting about .330 with a .980 OPS at AAA. It's pretty interesting that they were able to get 2 AAA hitters who were having monster minor league seasons back, who are already on the big league team at this deadline, and Jose Tena, who had the walk-off hit over the weekend, and now Chaparro, another corner infielder.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty decent mix of guys that they acquired at the deadline. I mean, Tyler Stewart's been striking out the world since he joined AA Harrisburg, and obviously Alex Clemmie is maybe the highest ceiling prospect and he's a ways away at low A. So you have a mix of guys who are, you know, maybe projectable in the future and some guys who could potentially help you now.
Jags, we talked about this a bunch. The pitching, especially the starting pitching, was so unbelievably good through about the first half of the season. And, you know, we all kind of said, hey, a correction is probably coming. That's okay because they've been so unbelievably good. You look at someone like Jake Irvin, ERA in the mid-threes for the first half, second half ERA over five. We've seen that from Mackenzie Gore, a little bit from Mitchell Parker as well. How much of that is kind of the natural regression, the grind of the season versus, hey, there's some things we should probably be looking to correct here?
Well, to me, Danny, a lot of it is just the length of a big league season. I mean, it's 162 games for a reason. You're going to make 30 to 32 starts. And, yeah, you know, your first go around, you know, through this grind, it can be tough when you get to starts, you know, 21 and above. And we've seen that with a lot of these young pitchers. And, you know, what you hope is that if there's some down, that there's some bounce back here. I think we saw that with Josiah Gray last year after making the All-Star team. He kind of hit a wall early in the second half, but then finished strong. You hope that, you know, while there's been a huge lull for Gore and Irvin's had some lull recently, that they can bounce back here in August and September and give you some good starts. I mean, we've seen Parker have some bounce back. Hers, you know, came back, pitched well out of the All-Star break. Now he's going to be facing trying to bounce back after a rough starting his last outing. So I think that's just part of the natural progression of a season. And they're all kind of doing this together. I mean, Corbin is the only real veteran of this mix. So they're all kind of learning this together, and they're going to ride the ups and downs together.
One of the guys in the stretch run here of a first full big league season is Jake Irvin, who's on the mound tonight. What do we need to know?
Well, first time facing the Orioles in his career, so this is a real nice challenge. I mean, Irvin, as he has struggled, that Danny mentioned in the second half, prone to the home run ball, and that really kind of bottomed out his last start. So this is a lineup that can hit home runs. We want to see him keep the ball in the ballpark tonight.
Jax, have a great call as always, man. Thanks for the time.
All right, guys. Good to talk to you.
Much appreciated, you as well, my friend. Hit that Local 53 sound whose name should change. Our guy, Earl Forster, to discuss those very gentlemen. Earl, they don't seem too desperate to do anything at left tackle.
Yeah.
Maybe wide receiver you could throw in there, although they signed Martavis Bryant. And kicker, what do they know that we don't know?
So this is all, we just have to have blind faith in the new regime, right? And I'm willing to do that because the difference between this year and years past is the folks running the show for 30 years, for three decades out there, had no clue. They stunk. And this regime, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm with you on the tackle thing. The kicker, look, and you know, our guy Rick Snyder put out a video today. I saw one of his videos about it. And, you know, he said kind of what you guys are pointing out, that it's not a problem yet. And that the kicker that's going to be, you know, kicking footballs come week one is probably not on the roster yet. And it was kind of a weird thing. And they were blindsided by what happened to the guy they had signed to solve the problem. But, yeah, it's interesting. The Martavis Bryant thing. And I, when I saw this come out yesterday, I retweeted it with just interesting, and then they ended up signing him today because it was a second time they brought him in for a look. So that was telling me that he was probably going to be here at least for a little while. I don't know what it means because you've talked about it already. Some strange things happen in the preseason opener. You've got one of your, you know, first round picks from a couple of years ago playing deep into the fourth quarter. Jahan Dotson, who you figure is going to be a big piece of this team, maybe now, who knows? And Deami Brown has been the guy turning heads, right? Who a lot of people were figuring out, well, this is probably it for him. This is his final year. So you just don't know. I think it's probably more of a camp deal, but, you know, the guy that's 6'4 that can run 4'4, you know, even if he hasn't played in 6 years, you know, if he's still got some of that left, why not? 17 touchdowns in 3 years up in Pittsburgh. The other thing I noticed about him.
About 10 years ago, though, unfortunately.
I know. maybe, here, listen to this. Maybe spent a little too much time in the CFL as well here.
Truly blessed, you know. Thank you for the organization.
Organization.
Wow.
Organization, don't you know.
He's definitely spent some time north of the
border. It's worth a shot. I mean, like you said, guys, why not? It's worth a shot. You know, and this Brandon Ayuk thing, as you heard the story I gave. It's still going on. Yeah. Well, there's a deal in place, but it hasn't been done yet. Who knows? Doesn't it? And I know, and JP Finley today, but basically don't read into it what they feel about the wide receiver room and stuff like that. And And I know it's probably not a guy that's any kind of long-term answer. May not even be here. Probably maybe a practice squad guy again. But if you're shopping for clothes or looking around for cars, you're probably looking for some clothes or a car, right? I think it's still TBD in the wide receiver room.
What did you make of the Jaden Daniels debut? We only got to see him throw the ball three times.
Loved it, right?
Gotta like the
Here's what
shot.
You're looking for. And I know your guess a little while ago, and I know they're not game planning. What do you take away from a lot of that? What they're going to do in the regular season? Nothing. Here's what you take away. Your number two pick stepped on the field, had the balls to change a play at the line of scrimmage, and hit a deep shot. Perfect throw to Deami. That's what you're looking for, right? Number two pick, step on the field, hit the deep shot on a checkoff. You know, that it was his call, and then just, you know, waltz into the end zone around the right end. Yes, yes, please. More of that. Check, check, check. Everything's great. It's what we have been told about from training camp, guys. It's what everybody's been seeing. It's what everybody saw last year when he threw for 40 and ran for 10 to win the Heisman Trophy as advertised so far. Excellent stuff from Jaden Daniels, no doubt.
Earl, I don't know if it's a hot take. I think it's kind of it's on its way to boiling take. I think they're going to run it way more than everyone's thinking about. I don't know how I'm going to quantify this yet in terms of where they'll rank in terms of rush attempts. It's going to be like after Ron Rivera walks down the hallway and talks to Scott Turner, very sternly, kind of like a midseason swerve. I think they're going to run it a ton. Your thoughts on that?
More than they did last year.
A dubious honor, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I think the perception is Kingsbury's going to want to throw the ball all over the place. I think diversity in the offense, yes, is what they need coming off last year, is what you hope for with a rookie quarterback, because that can take some heat off him. And again, I've talked to you guys about this before. Austin Ekeler was an early ad in free agency. That was not, no, he's still out there. Let's take a look, kick the tires. No, they wanted him here in D.C. Now he's more the pass catcher, right? And but he can carry the football, and he carried the load himself with the Chargers. So, you know, he's going to have some help with B-Rob, and I'm with you. But, you know, part of this component with the running game, it's not going to be, you know, 15 carries a game, but Jaden Daniels will be asked to run the football some. I know that people are squeamish about it, but that's what makes him what he is. He's got to use his legs. You saw what he did, you know, on that little end. How many times we see them at the goal line and they're dumbfounded over the recent years? And that was just, oh, I've got this on the read option. Easy. Just kind of jogged in for the touch easily. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think there's going to be more of a run component. I don't think it's, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. But I also think part of that is your quarterback. That part of his talent is running the football.
He'll be heavily involved in that regard.
By the way, I'm Team Sugar on the soft
regular
drinks,
Coke.
I can't do the sugar free. I'm a 15 packets of sugar in the coffee guy. So
30 packets of ketchup. Frankenstein from Big Daddy. So 15
more sugar,
of
more
sugar
salt,
in the
please.
Coffee. Let's go, Earl. So, enjoy it while we're here.
God bless.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you. There's Earl Forsey on our Beltway Blitz. Let's talk NFL football. Enough about the Commanders. We'll extrapolate out the conversation nationally with our friend Chris Russell. What the heck are you doing here, buddy?
Hello, boys. How are we? I'm just, visiting from the minor leagues.
Oh, finish your podcast on the Deuce Pal?
Exactly. On ESPN Ocho.
We had no idea Rainey would be at our 10-15 Half Street headquarters.
Occasionally, they still let the rooster out of the cage.
First time, long time, buddy. Welcome aboard.
Good to see you guys.
106.7 The Fan.
Danny, you look great. Grant,
Thank you, bud.
Look like Grant.
Thank you, buddy. Yeah. That's very nice of you. Always good to see you as well.
Yes.
Let's go through some of our storylines around the NFL with Chris Russell. Brandon Ayuk. Trade could be happening.
Yeah, finally.
Sounds like the Pittsburgh Steelers, mm-hmm. San Francisco 49ers are in talks on a deal. Mm-hmm. Now, the Steelers and Ayuk, as you know, have come together on some type of package that would get him paid. Do you think this happens?
I mean, I guess with the new reporting from Rap Sheet, yes. Because It looked like at one point late last week that he was going to go back to the 49ers, but apparently that offer, not surprisingly, you know Kyle, I know Kyle, they've paid everybody, but they ain't paying anybody ridiculous, and right now they're not even paying Trent, who's more valuable, I think, than Ayuk. It looks like they wanted to get him back. Maybe they upped their offer a little bit from 27, 28 to 29, 30, somewhere in that range. I don't know that for sure, and that wasn't good enough. I think Pittsburgh's going to give them $32, $33 million a year because they're desperate. They've had a mess at wide receiver. They still have Pickens, but he's a little bit cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, so they're going to add another guy that's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Just make it part of the room. I don't have a good answer for this, by the way, so let's spitball together. I feel like we're seeing more pay me, I'm going to show up, but then sit out moves.
Yeah, we are.
Now.
Because of the new CBA.
Right, because of the CBA. But there's I feel like this year, it feels like more than anywhere else, whether it's CeeDee Lamb or Ja'Marr Chase or Hassan Reddick or Brandon Ayuk. Maybe it's more high profile, or maybe it's my imagination, or I'm forgetting about ones in previous years. But it feels like epidemic, maybe a little bit strong. Yeah. But it feels like now this is the run of things. Why do you think that is? Is it as simple as that's how the rules are and it just happens to be a good year for free agents?
Yeah, CBA and all that stuff, sure. But I also think, if you see a guy doing it, especially if you're in the same position, you say, well, if that guy's doing it, I'm willing to do it because so what? Screw that. If I get find $40,000 a day, that's nothing. That's chump change. That's a couple of ham sandwiches. For me, when I'm making $15, $20 million a year and I'm trying to get to 30 or 35 or whatever. So I think it's they see others doing it. Okay. Some guys get their bag. Some guys don't. Some guys get traded. Some guys get whatever. And then the other part of it is I just think the way markets have exploded, right? If you look at just the wide receiver market, San Francisco thought apparently they had a deal done with him for $25, $26 million a year earlier this offseason. And now Ayuk is looking and saying, whoa, wait a second. Justin Jefferson got his. A.J. Brown got his.
Well, Jefferson got 35.
I know, but he's like, I'm not Justin Jefferson, but I'm right behind him. That's probably how he's approaching
it. That's how he's thinking, but I think your point's 100% correct. The explosion in these markets has elevated now the cost of the house, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
I was ready to give you $600,000 for a house, and then two doors down, something sold for $900,000, and now you're going, wait a second.
Exactly.
So that's definitely in play here.
And I don't know if that's more agent or player or both. I'm not sure. I haven't been able to figure out that component of it yet, but clearly that's what's happened here with Ayuk in San Francisco. And hey, good for Pittsburgh. If they're willing to pay that money, I mean, you've said correctly, forever, both of you guys have said, crap at quarterback. Now, I don't know still what they have at quarterback because Justin Fields ain't it. I can tell you that much. I don't know what Russell Wilson is, but Justin Fields ain't it. But now they've got two really good receivers and a pretty good tight end and a darn good defense. So
J.J. McCarthy news today was just
devastating.
He looked so good in the first preseason game. Rookie, Michigan national champion, vying for the starting job perhaps in Minnesota. And now he's getting surgery on his meniscus. Might be out for the year.
Yeah, because they said they might find additional damage,
They need to know if it's fully torn or not. And they won't know until they go in and operate on the knee. It's possible that they have to do a full restructure, which would be a potential 9-month recovery.
And I believe if he goes on IR before the 53 cut down, then he's got to be out for the year. I believe if they have a chance to get him back, a couple of weeks into the season or whenever it is, that he's going to have to be put on the 53, carried through, and then put on IR. All these wackadoo rules so that you can't stash people. He's probably going to be gone for at least half the year, if not, again, to your point, the whole year. I guess it's good that that Minnesota was willing to bid what the Commanders weren't for Sam Darnold. Remember, the Commanders, according to Standig, and I think we all thought they would be in on Darnold, they were outbid by Minnesota. The price got too high. Minnesota, I think, went $10 million or something like that for a year.
He got a big contract.
Now it's looking like, man, that might save their season. And we're talking Sam Darnold, who largely stinks.
Well, save their season for what exactly?
Well, save their season for eight wins?
To be in fourth place in that division?
Yeah, I mean, but competitive. And yeah, no. I guess you never know.
No, I know what you mean.
$10 million, by the way.
Yeah. Put you on the spot here. Who's your team that nobody's talking enough about?
AFC, NFC?
Doesn't matter. Anywhere, wherever you want.
Huh. That's a great question. I hate that question because it's going to make me really think. I'm going to go...
Take your time. We're not doing anything here.
Nobody's talking
you
about.
New to this game here, Russell?
I don't know. It's a hard question. Can I say the Green Bay Packers? Or no?
That's totally fine. Because Detroit's the darling. Yeah. Chicago's got all the. Right. It's the new sexy
their
attention.
Playoff expected.
I know. I couldn't come up. The only other team that came through my mind, and Commanders fans ain't going to like this. I think Tampa Bay is better than people are giving them credit for, and I think Tampa Bay is going to be a rude welcoming for the Burgundy and Gold.
I think that division stinks, so like if you're fine, you might win it again.
Yeah.
Slashy, it's great to see your smiling face.
It is good to see you guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the invite.
Oh, always. We love to have you on the program.
Yes, thank you.
How much did we learn about Cliff Kingsbury's offense in preseason game number one? Want to get into that next on Grant and Danny.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Saturday afternoon in the Meadowlands, we got our first look at Cliff Kingsbury's offense. Now, I'm hesitant to take a lot out of what we saw because in the same way when we're saying we got to grade Jaden Daniels with a grain of salt or anybody else, you know Kingsbury gave us a pretty vanilla look at what he wants to do. But I do think there were some key takeaways. The first was Washington, which was not slow, but certainly not one of the faster teams in terms of tempo offensively last year, ran plays at the fastest rate of any team in the league in the first week of the preseason. So if you look at time between snaps, tempo basically you operated your offense with, the Commanders were number one in football this past week, which would be notable regardless of who your coordinator was. But when it's a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, who you already know likes to go no huddle, likes tempo, you know, comes from the college game before he was the head coach of the Cardinals and was at USC helping them last year, it goes without saying that's what they want to be. That's what they want to do. They want to get as many plays off as possible. It's like an NBA team that wants a lot of possessions. They want to run.
Yeah, a little Mike D'Antoni ball.
The more you shoot, the more you're going to score. The more offensive possessions you get, the more points you're going to put up, right? So I think that was the first takeaway that meant something to me was the pace, the tempo, the no huddle element. I think there's going to be plenty of times this year where they get to that. Maybe early in games, they came out without running true legitimate huddles for Jaden Daniels. And especially if he's comfortable and maybe more comfortable doing that, why not major in that from time to time? Now, you've got to move the sticks. I still remember talking to Mike Shanahan about why he didn't like no huddle and he hated it. But he didn't do it more often, and he talked about how awful it is for your defense and, you know, would go back to the old football axioms of, you know, the each phase of the ball being responsible for the other, right? And this, you know, NFL game is really about taking care of the defense as an offense and vice versa. And so if you're going up tempo and you're not moving the chains, then they're going to be right back.
Yeah, it's higher risk and lower floor.
But I still love that they came out, they showed no huddle right away, they showed tempo.
Yeah, I mean, I misspoke. I mean, it's higher ceiling, lower floor, right? Like, if you go three and out in 30 seconds, that's a disaster. That's bad. That's almost like a sudden change turnover kind of situation. But it can also be successful. I mean, to me, the thing that I've always wanted is what Green Bay does when they, or what Green Bay did for a long time when they had Aaron Rodgers, and they were just so well orchestrated. It's, if we got you in a personnel grouping that we like that's to our advantage, you don't get to substitute. We're not just going to let you trot on the guys that you want to have on. We're getting right to the line. We'll probably draw you off sides once, and we're going to beat you to you know what with that matchup that we think is better for us. New England did that when they had the double tight end look. The smart, good offenses that are cohesive and on the same page can do those sorts of things where we're not going to let you be in sub-package that you like or you prefer. It's the thing I worry about, honestly, all the time. When you've got some continuity, like if you look at Philadelphia that's got Hurts now for a few years, look at Dallas with Dak, and that got, it was similar offense for a while, where Washington's got all these sub-packages. Their dime linebacker is this guy. Their nickel linebacker is this guy. This, when they go to the extra safeties, that you could negate some of that stuff by just getting to the line. You could take your time once you're there, but you don't let people substitute. I love that idea as a way just, again, to make somebody comfortable and also exploiting a positive matchup if you have one.
The other thing that we saw in the first preseason game, at least in the drive where the starters were on the field especially, 11-play, 70-yard touchdown drive, moved right down the field. Cliff Kingsbury called 8 running plays on that drive. And for all the conversations we've had about Daniels, it was 3 passes. 2 of them were screens. Now, by design, you weren't trying to show anything, and it was pretty Trader Joe's vanilla ice cream. But 8 runs and 11 plays. You just talked about this in the Beltway Blitz, and you asked, I think it was Russell.
Mm-hmm. It was Earl, actually. But
Earl,
yeah.
That's who it was. It was Earl. Do you think they're going to run it a lot more than maybe people suggest? I mean, the expectation I've heard all year long from our guests, certainly since training camp began, is they're going to run the football a ton. So are you saying more than whatever? The expectation is they're going to be super balanced, at least, and maybe even major in the run and minor in the passing this year to help Jaden Daniels. But I think if you include Jaden Daniels' designed runs, Jaden Daniels' keeper stuff, not scrambles on passing plays, but just the times that they ask him to run the ball by design, I think they're absolutely going to be a run-first team, essentially, this year. As well, they probably should be with a young quarterback. See 2012 Robert Griffin. Like, take a little bit off the young guy's plate, make the reads a little bit easier with play action, and use his legs to make defenses go 11 on 11.
So I have a couple data points, and I've been mulling this for a few days, and I feel like I'm now ready to unleash the theory, so to speak. You go back to Kyler Murray's rookie year, Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona, right? They didn't run it at an outrageous rate. I think they had around 400 rush attempts to right around 1,000 plays. Okay, so that's not a ridiculous, 60-40 type split. It's not what Baltimore was doing or San Francisco was doing. Both of those teams that year playing with tremendous leads, so you're salting away the clock, and you're so good at running it that you just sort of major in that. But hidden within that is effective runs. Hidden within that is not just running on first down, Scott Turner, Ron Rivera style, and setting up bad down and distance. It's effective running, getting a lot of first downs via the run, right? On that second and 4 after an early down short pass or something like that, or even an extension of the run game to take care of that young quarterback. My second part of my theory here is I think this front office is smart. I'm operating with that assumption. I'm just a dude, okay? But I look at a receiver room where you got Jahan Dotson, sort of a slot guy, playing deep into the second quarter of a preseason game. You don't really have much beyond Terry McLaurin. They didn't seem interested in going out and trading for a Keenan Allen or using a high pick in the draft in what was deemed as a pretty excellent receiver class on a wideout to improve that room. And I'm going, if you're going to do what I think everybody else has thought you were going to do, which is let the young quarterback thrive and throw the football and give him weapons, give him safety blankets and give him yards after the catch and explosive plays and all sorts of things that are going to make him, a CJ Stroud-like figure, you would address that. You would improve that group from someone that's PFF doesn't have as 26th overall in terms of the skill position groups. You would have done something. And then it occurred to me, they don't plan on doing that. They plan on running the ball. They're going to protect him by running the ball even more than everybody, including people like me, think. It's not a priority because it's not a priority. They didn't think that he was best served, talking about Daniels, this is my theory, to drop back a reasonable number of times. They're going to do it less than that. They're going to run the ball way more than I think everybody's anticipating, and that's how they're going to indoctrinate him into the league.
So I think it's hard to like decipher what everybody's anticipating is, but I think they are going to run the ball a lot. And that's, I mean, we've talked about it on the show quite a bit. I think that is going to be the philosophy early in his career. And it should be with a dual threat quarterback who's got some learning to do. You could probably just stop at, it should be with a young quarterback, right? So that's number one. We learned that, and we saw that with Sam Howell last year to some extent. But the other thing I will say to that is, in addition to the fact that it just makes sense to not ask Jaden Daniels to go be a superstar, I also think the quick game is going to be his best friend. When you talk about how they're going to protect him, they're going to protect him with a lot of horizontal raid, I'll call it. Quick, safe, easy throws. We saw two screens on three passing plays, and three screens were called, as a matter of fact. Now, some of that is you're showing nothing. But I do think the foundation of their passing game is going to be horizontal. The foundation of their passing game is going to be short yardage, quick completions. And I do think people should get ready for that. So between the running game, which is going to help take some pressure off him, and not having him hold the ball in the pocket that long on designed, longer developing 5- and 7-step plays, you will whittle down the number of times that you're asking him to process a ton. And I think it seems like he could do that. But just generally as a young quarterback, the less you're asking, the better. And the amount of time he's going to hold the ball behind this line. And that those two things could both elevate his floor as a rookie.
And I think ultimately the path to excellence to me is more of a balance. And it's allowing him to have some of those gaudy numbers like Justin Herbert had as a rookie, that C.J. Stroud had last year to a degree, that Baker Mayfield had, frankly, in Cleveland, that was supported also by a good running game and good talent around him. I think they're just not as concerned with wide receiver talent. I think there is a reason Austin Ekeler was a priority, which is to catch the ball to the backfield early and often. Yeah. I think there's a reason their second-round pick was a tight end that people weren't really sure would go in the second round. He's going to get some targets. You add in Zach Ertz, the safety blanket.
Close
to the line of scrimmage type passing game, I'm with you, is what they're going to major in.
That's the way the NFL's trending anyway.
Yeah, I would say if there is such a thing as a typical series, right? There isn't, but bear with me. Your average series will look like this. First down from the shotgun, running back to either your left or your right in a split, quick handoff fake, short pass for 4.5 yards. Second down, run. Third down, dealer's choice, right? Again, another short pass potentially or otherwise to kind of try to keep the sticks moving. I think that's going to be your average three downs for this offense. And I had this vision of this prolific passer who could also run it, you know, putting up 4,000 yards as a rookie potentially, if you went out and got him the kind of talent that Caleb Williams has in Chicago. And I don't think that's their vision. I think they're going to limit his opportunities for big, gaudy numbers and, you know, try to spoon feed and build that way with the short, safe stuff to go with the running game.
There was no path to do what the Bears did because you didn't have the other top 10 pick to get an Adunze type player. They could have traded for Keenan Allen, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have 2/3 of what the Bears had.
And that's kind of my point.
And they didn't do that, obviously. But yeah, I mean, to me, that's another story of talking about what is their offense going to look like with Cliff Kingsbury and what did we learn from this past weekend. To get back to that, I mean, I saw a lot more of the read option stuff. I think that's going to be a huge part of this offense. I don't want to say it's going to be 2012 all over again, but I think it's going to look more like 2012 maybe than people think, which was a 1,600-yard Alfred Morris season. And Robert Griffin running the ball on keepers a ton, making Morris better, making everything in that offense easier, and you know a lot of easy kind of half the field one-read throws. And if Cliff Kingsbury's smart, there's no reason he doesn't just pull up some of that tape because Daniels can do anything Griffin did, maybe better at this point as a prospect coming out of the SEC. Next on Grant and Danny. Yesterday you saw that the Jets were told by Hassan Reddick, their edge rusher, he wanted to be traded. They released one of the strongest statements to tell a player to bleep off that I've ever seen in my life. Like, it's the kind of statement where it's certainly not going to make the relationship better, but at least now you know you got nowhere to go but to show up to work. I want to read the statement and react to it. Also, some drama with the Raiders and security at their stadium. I'll give you the details on that. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Top of the hour, you know, Connor's on the show. He's a four-time best-selling author. I'm actually really pumped to ask him about the Aaron Rodgers documentary that he's, I should say biography. That's the book word for the video. I'm a documentary guy, but if you're a reader, it's a biography. But he talked to Rodgers for several hours after I think he'd finished his book. We can get some details on how involved Rodgers was. But a lot of headlines been made about the book as people are getting their hands on it in the media over the last couple of days. It comes out next week, so we'll talk to him right at the top of the hour here on Grant and Danny. Rodgers has to be now one of the most polarizing athletes in America, don't you think?
Without question.
I mean, it was not that way until a few years ago. But between the way things went down when he split with the Jets to during COVID, the vaccination stuff, really now to the fact that he has no problem giving his thoughts on anything, and including occasionally conspiracy theories. Like, I don't think he minds very much the fact that when his name comes up, he's now pretty divisive.
Without question. I mean, I was thinking about this too when we're getting ready to, you know, talk about this interview. There was a time where, I don't have a better word for it than this, but where you've kind of felt sorry for him, right? That whole draft night fiasco where he was the poster child for hanging out in that green room until the point that it was awkward. The number of camera shots of him just sort of twiddling his thumbs as team after team after team after team passed on him.
He was the 24th pick. He went one pick ahead of Jason Campbell to Washington at 25.
Uh-huh. I don't know. Might have been better if Washington was able to nab him. Just thinking about that in retrospect. Anyway, yes, you have that. And then Brett Favre's constantly tired act, who used to drive me crazy with the, oh, shucks, I'm not going to play. But yeah, maybe I'll play. Come to fly to my house and convince me to play. Then coming back, not informing the Jets. That history repeating itself all over again, where he's an MVP and they're like, we're drafting your replacement. Like, what? What are you doing? Instead of that, why don't you draft him a wideout one time or spend a dollar in free agency on somebody? You're squandering a Super Bowl contender. And they just ho-hum going 13-3 every year. And then he sort of turned. Then the turn happened where it went from, I feel for this guy, what else does he have to do, to, my God, is he a lot to deal with? And he is. And that lot to deal with meter went, now it's just in the red, spiking all the time.
I want to hear from Ian O'Connor about the book, so we'll do that right at the top. Joe Douglas is the GM of the Jets. They just played Washington last weekend. Mm-hmm. Hassan Reddick, they traded for start of the offseason, edge rusher, has been outstanding the last 3 years. Hassan Reddick's bounced all over the place, though. He, too, is a guy that it seems like just can't quite find a home in the NFL where he can go out and put up numbers consistently. 2 years ago when the Eagles made the Super Bowl, he put up 16 sacks for them. Last year had 11 sacks, and now after 2 years, his stay in Philly is ending, which is a long stay for him. They traded him to the Jets because he wanted a new contract. Mm-hmm. They said no, so the Jets picked him up start of the offseason. Well, apparently, the reporting is, and it sounds like it's coming from his agent, the story out there from some media members is that the Jets made it sound to him like they were going to give him money after the trade. At least they told him, we're going to keep working on getting an extension done. Well, supposedly, there's been no talks on an extension since he was acquired back in the spring. So he's been a holdout. Not a hold-in, where he comes to practice and stands there, but he's just accruing fines, not showing up, and he keeps telling them, I'm not coming until you pay me. I will not be there. So they've been in this stare down. He demanded a trade yesterday through the media with his agent.
Mm-hmm.
He asked for another trade, went to the team, and requested a trade. This was the statement that the Jets and their GM, Joe Douglas, put out right after we got off the air yesterday. I don't remember a statement from a team that was so strong of a bleep you to a player in a long, long time. So Reddick comes out and says, I want a trade. This is the Jets' rebuttal. Quote, we have informed Hassan that we will not trade him, that he is expected to be here with his teammates, and that we will continue to be fined, that he will continue to be fined per the CBA if he does not report. Since the trade discussions back in March, we have been clear, direct, and consistent with our position. Our focus will remain on the guys we have here as we prepare for the regular season.
Mm-mm-mm.
End quote. So they not only said, show up, we're going to fine you every single day. But they also called his bluff on, or at least stated shenanigans on this idea that they made it seem to him like there'd be a good faith attempt to get him paid. They said, we have told him the exact same thing, and we've been really clear about it since the moment we acquired him. Meaning, they never told him they were going to pay him. Get to work. And that's about as strong a statement for Joe Douglas as you could put out.
That is a concise yet firm stance that that is a flag in the ground right there. There's no ambiguity.
Joe Douglas off the top rope. I mean, you could pick your internet meme. The one that you always see is like the one kid who's like kind of tilting his head and everyone else is like dancing behind him after like he, I don't know if he won, like he like knocked someone out or if he like won a dance off or something, but like there's a body on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. And Joe Douglas, you might as well just draw with chalk the outline of Hassan Reddick on the ground or something. Because Douglas, you win. It's over now. You just told him, we will find your ass for every single day you're not here. We'll be waiting for you.
So I'm trying to put myself in, like, if I'm a Jets fan. What's the end game here? Like, in other words, do we believe that Hassan Reddick will eventually show up and try to play football and play at a high level for me? Or are we now,
he has a choice.
Are we now in the spite phase, right? Like,
but let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What choice does he have?
Very little.
With the new CBA, it's a ton of money. Now, he's made some good money, so maybe if he wants to get rid of several million dollars, he could do that. But you don't accrue the season. So I guess technically he could show up right at the last minute, several games in, be a malcontent and just be around for the several games of the year that you need to accrue a season. But if he doesn't show up, he doesn't get closer to the end of his contract. You just push back how long you're there. So he has zero leverage here.
I think he's due like $14 million in change this year. So it's not top of the market defensive end money that would fit with someone that's averaged 11 and a half, 12 sacks over the last handful of seasons. But it's not chump change either. It's not rookie deal stuff, or it's not embarrassing. I don't know, man.
He signed a three-year, $45 million deal with Philly. He played 2 years there, so he's going into the final year of his deal. His cap number, his base salary this year is about $14.25 million. There was a potential out before 2024 to make this a two-year, $31.5 million deal, and they would have had to accrue $20 million in dead money.
Mm-hmm.
They traded him, and the Jets took on the final year of the deal, so the Eagles didn't have to.
Yeah, which is good value for a double-digit sack pass rusher.
Absolutely.
I'll do that right now.
But he's also not making nothing. Like, you're not making...
And that's kind of my point.
...a lot, and I understand why he's angry. Think about it. Had Washington have picked up Chase Young's fifth-year option, which people thought they should have, they were wrong. People were upset they didn't. They were silly geese.
Mm-hmm.
But they would have owed him this year over $17 million. He would have made about $3.5 million more this year than Hassan Reddick, who's been an annual double-digit sack, average like 12, 13 sack guy over the last few seasons. So he is dramatically underpaid. There's no disputing that. But, Danny, there's a difference between being annoyed and having the leverage to do something about it. And I don't think that he does right now. And the Jets basically said very publicly yesterday, you don't. Sorry, man. We're waiting for you.
How does it end? Does it end at some point where...
I think he shows like, up with his tail between his legs and plays football.
No contract, though.
And no, I think he's a free agent at the end of the year. But the problem is, you better go ball. Like, by holding out, not being a part of the offseason program with a new team, not being around your new teammates, not being in the preseason in any capacity, I don't mean just the games, but around the team in August, are you making it easier on yourself to have a great year? You know what the best way for you to get paid at this point is? The best way would be to hold out and have someone pay you. But as soon as the Jets have made it clear, and obviously over the last few weeks they have, if they're willing to put out that statement yesterday, that you're not getting paid by us, the next best way is just to go kick ass for a year and try to get $22 million a year or something this offseason. Go have 13 sacks going into your contract year. Boom, it's over. You just got paid.
And you might end up with one of those, because it's so hard. I mean, I can imagine if I'm him and I now have negative feelings towards the Jets, whether they're justified or not, but it probably seems that way. The relationship is adversarial, I would say. Where I'll go, fine. I'll do what I want. I'm gonna freelance and get up the field all the time and just go for sacks.
Right.
Then maybe you get your butt benched. I mean, like, it is
at
one
least
of these,
you're there, not getting fired.
Yeah. I mean,
here's
it's one
what
of those things.
If I was the Jets, I would go to him and I would say, "We got to end this charade. What if we do an incentive package, some kind of restructure, where for every sack over 10, we give you another $1 million or something? You know what I'm saying? Something
yeah,
like
sure,
that.
Sure.
So if you go out and kick butt, you're going to get what you want. Like, you're at 14 million, but if you get to 11 sacks, it's $1 million bonus. 12 sacks is 2 million. Because then what you want and I want are equaling together. I'm trying to go win a Super Bowl this year. Mm-hmm. We're working toward the same goal. Do something with incentives that actually makes it so that he's willing to show up and inspired to go dominate.
I'd be into that. I mean, it's one of those things. You haven't seen people do stuff like that because it's just not, hasn't normally been done. Like that incentivized structure. I know players don't love it. They want guaranteed money and good luck with that. It's the NFL. But like, you got to at some point get the guy back in with positive feelings. Like, you want everyone to want to be part of the same thing. That's not what's happening right now.
Ian O'Connor, the author of the new biography on Aaron Rodgers, joins us next on Grant and Danny.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Top of the hour, Ian O'Connor's on the show. He's a 4-time best-selling author. I'm actually really pumped to ask him about the Aaron Rodgers documentary that he's, I should say biography. That's the book word for the video. I'm a documentary guy, but if you're a reader, it's a biography. But he talked to Rodgers for several hours after I think he'd finished his book. We can get some details on how involved Rodgers was. But a lot of headlines been made about the book as people are getting their hands on it in the media over the last couple of days. It comes out next week, so we'll talk to him right at the top of the hour here on Grant and Danny. Rodgers has to be now one of the most polarizing athletes in America, don't you think?
Without question.
I mean, it was not that way until a few years ago, but between the way things went down when he split with the Jets to during COVID, the vaccination stuff, really now to the fact that he has no problem giving his thoughts on anything, and including occasionally conspiracy theories. Like, I don't think he minds very much the fact that when his name comes up, he's now pretty divisive.
Without question. I mean, I was thinking about this too when we're getting ready to, you know, talk about this interview. There was a time where, I don't have a better word for it than this, but where you've kind of felt sorry for him, right? That whole draft night fiasco where he was the poster child for hanging out in that green room until the point that it was awkward. The number of camera shots of him just sort of twiddling his thumbs as team after team after team after team passed on him.
He was the 24th pick. He went one pick ahead of Jason Campbell to Washington at 25.
Uh-huh. I don't know. Might have been better if Washington was able to nab him. Just thinking about that in retrospect. Anyway, yes, you have that. And then Brett Favre's constantly tired act, who used to drive me crazy with the, oh, shucks, I'm not going to play. Yeah, maybe I'll play. Come to fly to my house and convince me to play. Then coming back, not informing the Jets. That history repeating itself all over again, where he's an MVP and they're like, we're drafting your replacement. And like, what? What are you doing? Instead of that, why don't you draft him a wideout one time or spend a dollar in free agency on somebody? You're squandering a Super Bowl contender. And they just ho-hum going 13-3 every year. And then he sort of turned. Then the turn happened where it went from, I feel for this guy, what else does he have to do, to, my God, is he a lot to deal with? And he is. And that lot to deal with meter went, now it's just in the red, spiking all the time.
I want to hear from Ian O'Connor about the book, so we'll do that right at the top. Joe Douglas is the GM of the Jets. They just played Washington last weekend. Mm-hmm. Hassan Reddick, they traded for start of the offseason, edge rusher. Has been outstanding the last 3 years. Hassan Reddick's bounced all over the place, though. He, too, is a guy that it seems like just can't quite find a home in the NFL where he can go out and put up numbers consistently. 2 years ago when the Eagles made the Super Bowl, he put up 16 sacks for them. Last year had 11 sacks, and now after 2 years, his stay in Philly is ending, which is a long stay for him. They traded him to the Jets because he wanted a new contract. Mm-hmm. They said no. So the Jets picked him up start of the offseason. Well, apparently, the reporting is, and it sounds like it's coming from his agent, the story out there from some media members is that the Jets made it sound to him like they were going to give him money after the trade. At least they told him, we're going to keep working on getting an extension done. Well, supposedly, there's been no talks on an extension since he was acquired back in the spring. So he's been a holdout. Not a hold-in, where he comes to practice and stands there, but he's just accruing fines, not showing up, and he keeps telling them, I'm not coming until you pay me. I will not be there. So they've been in this stare down. He demanded a trade yesterday through the media with his agent.
Mm-hmm.
He asked for another trade, went to the team, and requested a trade. This was the statement that the Jets and their GM, Joe Douglas, put out right after we got off the air yesterday. I don't remember a statement from a team that was so strong of a bleep you to a player in a long, long time. So Reddick comes out and says, I want to trade. This is the Jets' rebuttal. Quote, we have informed Hassan that we will not trade him, that he is expected to be here with his teammates, and that we will continue to be fined, that he will continue to be fined per the CBA if he does not report. Since the trade discussions back in March, we have been clear, direct, and consistent with our position. Our focus will remain on the guys we have here as we prepare for the regular season.
Mm-mm-mm.
End quote. So they not only said, show up, we're going to fine you every single day, but they also called his bluff on, or at least stated shenanigans on this idea that they made it seem to him like there'd be a good faith attempt to get him paid. They said, we have told him the exact same thing, and we've been really clear about it since the moment we acquired him. Meaning, they never told him they were going to pay him. Get to work. And that's about as strong a statement for Joe Douglas as you could put out.
That is a concise yet firm stance. That is a flag in the ground right there. There's no ambiguity.
Joe Douglas off the top rope. I mean, you could pick your internet meme. The one that you always see is like the one kid who's like kind of tilting his head and everyone else is like dancing behind him after like he, I don't know if he won, like he like knocked someone out or if he like won a dance off or something. But like there's a body on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. And Joe Douglas, you might as well just draw with chalk the outline of Hassan Reddick on the ground or something. Because Douglas, you win. It's over now. You just told him, we will find your ass. For every single day you're not here, we'll be waiting for you.
So I'm trying to put myself in, like, if I'm a Jets fan, what's the end game here? Like, in other words, do we believe that Hassan Reddick will eventually show up and try to play football and play at a high level for me, or are we now
as a choice?
Are we now in the spite phase, right? Like,
but let me ask you this:
yeah,
what choice does he have?
Very little.
With the new CBA, it's a ton of money. Now, he's made some good money, so maybe if he wants to get rid of several million dollars, he could do that. But you don't accrue the season. So I guess technically he could show up right at the last minute, several games in, be a malcontent, and just be around for the several games of the year that you need to accrue a season. But if he doesn't show up, he doesn't get closer to the end of his contract. You just push back how long you're there. So he has zero leverage here.
I think he's due like $14 million in change this year. So it's not top of the market defensive end money that would fit with someone that's averaged 11.5-12 sacks over the last handful of seasons. But it's not chump change either. It's not rookie deal stuff, or it's not embarrassing. I don't know, man.
He signed a 3-year, $45 million deal with Philly. He played 2 years there, so he's going into the final year of his deal. His cap number, his base salary this year is about $14.25 million. There was a potential out before 2024 to make this a 2-year, $31.5 million deal, and they would have had to accrue $20 million in dead money.
Mm-hmm.
They traded him, and the Jets took on the final year of the deal, so the Eagles didn't have
to. Yeah, which is good value for a double-digit sack pass rusher.
Absolutely.
I'll do that right now.
But he's also not making nothing. Like, you're not making...
And that's kind of my point.
...a lot, and I understand why he's angry. Think about it. Had Washington have picked up Chase Young's fifth-year option, which people thought they should have, they were wrong. People were upset they didn't. They were silly geese.
Mm-hmm.
But they would have owed him this year over $17 million. He would have made about $3.5 million more this year than Hassan Reddick, who's been an annual double-digit sack, average like 12, 13 sack guy over the last few seasons. So he is dramatically underpaid. There's no disputing that. But, Danny, there's a difference between being annoyed and having the leverage to do something about it. And I don't think that he does right now. And the Jets basically said very publicly yesterday, you don't. Sorry, man. We're waiting for you.
How does it end? Does it end at some point where...
I think he shows up with his tail between his legs and plays football.
No contract, though.
And no, I think he's a free agent at the end of the year. But the problem is, you better go ball. Like, by holding out, not being a part of the offseason program with a new team, not being around your new teammates, not being in the preseason in any capacity, I don't mean just the games, but around the team in August, are you making it easier on yourself to have a great year? You know what the best way for you to get paid at this point is? The best way would be to hold out and have someone pay you. But as soon as the Jets have made it clear, and obviously over the last few weeks they have, if they're willing to put out that statement yesterday, that you're not getting paid by us, the next best way is just to go kick ass for a year and try to get $22 million a year or something this offseason. Go have 13 sacks going into your contract year. Boom, it's over. You just got paid.
And you might end up with one of those, because it's so hard. I mean, I can imagine if I'm him and I now have negative feelings towards the Jets, whether they're justified or not, but it probably seems that way. The relationship is adversarial, I would say. Where I'll go, fine. I'll do what I want. I'm gonna freelance and get up the field all the time and just go for sacks.
Right.
Then maybe you get your butt benched. I mean, like, it is
at
one
least
of these.
You're there, not getting fired.
Yeah. I mean,
here's
it's one of those things.
If I was the Jets, I would go to him and I would say, "We got to end this charade. What if we do an incentive package, some kind of restructure, where for every sack over 10, we give you another $1 million or something? You know what I'm saying? Something
like
that. So if you go out and kick butt, you're going to get what you want. Like, you're at 14 million, but if you get to 11 sacks, it's $1 million bonus. 12 sacks is 2 million. Because then what you want and I want are equaling together. I'm trying to go win a Super Bowl this year.
Mm-hmm.
We're working toward the same goal. Do something with incentives that actually makes it so that he's willing to show up and inspired to go dominate.
I'd be into that. I mean, it's one of those things. You haven't seen people do stuff like that because it's just not. Hasn't normally been done, like that incentivized structure. I know players don't love it. They want guaranteed money, and good luck with that. It's the NFL. But, like, you got to at some point get the guy back in with positive feelings. Like, you want everyone to want to be part of the same thing. That's not what's happening right now.
Ian O'Connor, the author of the new biography on Aaron Rodgers, joins us next on Grant and Danny.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Nore Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.